Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Thanks, Shirley. My name's Rob, I'm an addict.
Hi, Rob.
Yeah, it's really good to be here. You know, when I came in, a couple of people gave me some stuff. Like, somebody gave me a little stone that's quite dear to their heart for a bit of luck. You know, and my sponsor gave me an 8 years medallion. So I'm going to be, he's a bit premature. I'm going to be 8 years on Sunday. Thank you. But why I mention it about the prematurity of it is when I first came to NA, you know, I was so focused on getting the key rings, I used to get them early. You know, I used to always be a week early, 2 weeks early, you know, I always got my key rings early. And when I got to my multiple years, my first multiple years, my sponsor said, we'll go to Brixton and we'll, you know, we'll do the key ring thing at Brixton. But he was working and he was late, he couldn't do it for a couple of weeks, so I think we sort of, God sort of gave me that extra bit of time at the end, so I didn't get my multiple years for a few weeks late, if you know what I mean, so it sort of made up for it. Yeah, it's just really good to be here, you know. You know, thanks for that, Amy, it was really nice to hear, you know, and I could really identify with, you know, that coming to meetings and being really self-obsessed and scared to get up to get key rings and all that stuff, you know, I remember that really well. And I was like that for a few years in recovery. You know, I didn't sort of happen for me overnight that I started to get out of that. You know, I came to Narcotics Anonymous with a lot of attitudes and a lot of behaviours and a lot of principles, you know, that came from a previous life, really. Do you know what I mean? You know, the first meeting I ever went to, it wasn't my idea. You know, my wife took me to this meeting, you know, and I was in this meeting and it was in Harrow on the Hill and they were all quite posh. You know, and I wasn't. So I looked at all the differences, you know, and I sort of thought, nah, these people are all Mickey Mouse users. They definitely don't use what I use. You know what I mean? But what I remember about the meeting, in hindsight, looking back on it, was my ego and my pride and all that stuff was in the meeting. And my disease was in the meeting, separating me from that power. You know, I remember the pot going rounds, you know, and feeling a lot of shame and a lot of guilt because I didn't have any money to put in the pot. You know, and it's not about always putting money in the pot, you know, if you're a newcomer. You don't need to put money in the pot, you know, you don't say you're a member until you're a member, and, you know, until you say that, and you put money in the pot when you've got it, do you know what I mean? But I was full of shame, and, you know, it was sick pride, really. And what I also remember about the meeting was that after the meeting, all the guys were all trying to get us to go for teas and coffee, you know, and I thought they were all trying to crack on to my wife, and I was like, oh, are you, you know? That's my wife you're talking to, stay away. Do you know what I mean? So I wasn't very well when I got here. But I didn't come back for another 4 years, so I got a little bit sicker in the meantime. But I got to a point, and round about this time of the year, well, it's a week or two before, where I hit real sort of desperation, you know. And what sort of got me to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and it's not really about this stuff, but it's the stuff that got me here. You know, I had, you know, 2 heart attacks, I had septicemia twice, I had deep vein thrombosis in both my legs, they nearly cut my legs off 3 times, they nearly cut my thumb off, they did cut 2 of my fingers off, you know what I mean? And I thought I was doing all right, thank you very much. I thought it was sweet, you know what I mean? Great, I'll get a bigger script, I'll get this, I'll get that, you know what I mean? So I thought I was all right. But I got here, you know, and I didn't understand what was wrong with me when I got here. You know, I was fully, you know, I went to this, what happened, in the end, I ended up in this flat in Barnet. I bottomed out in Barnet, quite a posh part of town, but I bottomed out in Barnet. And it's funny, the guy, he's in the room tonight, he really helped me out. You know, he's not one of us, but, you know, he really helped me. And this guy, you know, he had every right just to say to me, look, just go away. You know, it caused him a lot of damage and, you know, throughout my addiction and stuff. And I reached out and asked him for some help, you know what I mean? So he got a hold of me and he put me into this flat and put a big padlock on the door and locked me in for about 3 or 4 days. But, it, you know, it helped me, you know, because, you know, I was so desperate. And I sort of, you know, I'd had all that stuff happen, you know, and I was at a point where I was sort of, I was eating out of bins, picking dog ends up off the street, you know, all that stuff, you know, my using was not glamorous at all, do you know what I mean? But I still thought I knew some stuff, do you know what I mean, when I got here. You know, and I ended up in this crisis intervention centre, and even then, when I phoned this place, I didn't think I was bad enough to go there. You know what I mean? I thought, they're not going to take me, I'm not that bad, really. Do you know what I mean? I was 7 stone, I was nearly dead. you know, and I was in a mess, but I still thought it wasn't too bad, you know, and the ego, you know, just, it was there. But I got into this institution, you know, and I remember the guy that's my sponsor now, he came and got me from the hospital, and I remember when I got there, he shared to me that, you know, he was in recovery, and it just, it blew me away, you know, it was the first time my ears were open enough to hear something, I think, and I thought, I really want what this guy's got, you know. And I was, you know, I was starving, hungry, I hadn't eaten in weeks, you know, I'd been nicking the odd sandwich at a bakery, I won't say its name, breaking traditions, but, so, you know, I was doing things like that, eating, as I said, eating out of bins and stuff, and my sponsor made, no, he wasn't my sponsor at the time, but he made this big sandwich, you know, and I was starving, hungry, and he says, oh, do you want something to eat? But again, the pride and the arrogance and the ego stepped in, and I'm like, no, I'm sweet, I'm all right. I'm dying on my feet and I can't ask for help, do you know what I mean? I'm starving. But anyway, so I'm in this institution. The next day, Narcotics Anonymous came in, you know, to do H&I service. And I'm really grateful for the guys that came in and done that. You know, I didn't really, I was really desperate, you know, and I started going to these meetings in this institution. And I didn't really hear much in the meetings. But what I remember about the meetings is the people were really nice. You know, she showed me a bit of kindness, gave me a bit of support and a bit of encouragement, and I kept going back to the meetings. You know, just before I got clean, I'd been kidnapped, I had been beaten up, you know, I was in quite a bad state when I got here, so I didn't trust anybody. But by the time I'd go to these meetings in this institution, and then I'd come out of the meetings, and I'd be in the community in the facility. And there'd be people who are sitting watching EastEnders and the football and all that stuff going, yeah, that ain't his crap, it don't work. And I'm going, yeah, you're right. I don't know nothing about it, but they're right. You know, I'm sort of looking for advice off of quite sick people, really. Do you know what I mean? And I'm buying into all that. But out of pure desperation, I kept going to meetings. You know, and, you know, people were advising me in this place about, you know, 12 steps and not 12 steps. So I was in quite, you know, I'd never sort of done treatment or anything really, and so I decided I wasn't going to do 12 steps because it sounded too much like hard work. You know, for one, it was tough love. I'd had enough of that, thank you very much. Do you know what I mean? People that loved me were quite tough on me when I was using, and I thought it was their fault. Do you know what I mean? So I thought, I ain't doing that. So as it turns out, I didn't get funding. I had to go to a 12-step treatment centre, and I'm really grateful for that. Do you know what I mean? You know, and treatment was great. It gave me a bed, it gave me some foods. Didn't really do any work there, you know what I mean, because I was really dishonest, I was really full of all this fear and anxiety, and I just didn't know how to be honest with anybody, you know. I thought that if I started opening my mouth and talking about stuff, I was just going to break down and cry and all that stuff, you know, and I just didn't really engage in treatment. But what it done for me, it sort of, it gave me a safe place, and they sent us to 3 meetings a week, which was really great, you know, and it sort of got me connected with the fellowship, you know, and I'd go to meetings. And I'd go to meetings and, you know, I'd hear all this stuff in meetings. You know, I used to hear a lot about step 4. That I don't really hear it much now. And I don't know if that was just my hearing problem or if it was what was actually going on. But a lot of people used to talk about relapsing while they were on step 4. And that step 4 was really painful. And I used to think, I ain't doing that. In fact, I don't need to do that. I really don't need to work the steps. You know, my consequences have been really serious. I don't need to work the steps. And I used to sit in meetings thinking, actually, these people don't really need to walk the steps either. They just need to hear how bad it's been for me. And then they'll never use again. You know what I mean? So I had all that stuff going on. But I didn't have the courage to sort of share that with anybody. You know, I could hardly talk. I used to open my mouth and say, I'm Rob. I'm like, and I'd be nearly crying. You know what I mean? Because I was quite vulnerable. And I just kept going to these meetings, you know, and I heard all that stuff. And I thought, I ain't doing that. You know, and I was getting progressively worse in recovery. You know, I didn't know. I suffer from a disease of addiction. It's a progressive illness, you know, and it talks about it in the literature. It talks about the illness progressing in recovery, you know, and I really identify with that, do you know what I mean? But, you know, I was going to these meetings and, you know, I heard about getting sponsorship. So I thought, okay, I'll get a sponsor. I was told to look for somebody that's got what I wanted. I didn't really know what I wanted, but I knew I wanted to stay clean. And there was a guy that used to sponsor people, and he used to give away the step working guide. So when he took on new sponsees, I thought, I'll touch a free book. So that's why I got him as a sponsor. then I thought, do you know what, I better get another man just in case he's not any good. You know, because I'm quite high maintenance, you know what I mean? Then I thought I better get one as well in another fellowship just in case, you know, and I had these three sponsors. And I just wasn't engaging in any sort of recovery, do you know what I mean? I was just... I used to see them in the street and I'd jump into shops and stuff, hiding from them. It was like they were the police or something, you know? I'd be hiding and all that stuff, you know? I just didn't have the ability, to be honest. I didn't really trust anybody, you know? And I only know a lot of this stuff in hindsight, you know, through being here for a little while and working through the steps and stuff like that. But, yeah, I was quite not well, you know what I mean? And I was just full of this fear and anxiety. You know, Amy spoke about it when she first came to me, it's fully all that fear and anxiety. And I just stayed in that for about 18 months. And I think I was between 9 months and a year clean. And I thought, I know what I'll do. I need a girlfriend. That's going to sort it right out. So I thought that was the solution. Girlfriend. So I started going out with this 24-year-old girlfriend in Narcotics Anonymous. She was 24, I was 44. You know what I mean? I thought we were going to run off into the NA sunset. I thought, you know what I mean? She was using, I was clean. Really healthy relationship. You know? But what happened was, you know, she slept with somebody in the fellowship. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, God, I was in bits. I was in turmoil. I said to her, it's all right, hen, you just keep coming back. But the guy that slept with her, I was going to kill. You know what I mean? I wanted to weigh him in. You know what I mean? And I'm hatching and plotting. I've got a claw hammer. You know, I'm really not well. I'm enraged. But anyway, you know, I spoke to one of my sponsors about it, and he says, look, you need to pray for him. I went away, and I went, okay, I'll pray for him. And I did. I prayed for him to go back out there. And he did. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I just didn't have the ability to look at what I was doing, and, you know, and I wouldn't do that stuff today. You know, going out with newcomers, no, it's quite dangerous, you know. Through that stuff happening, that girl might never come back to me, do you know what I mean? So it's quite dangerous, do you know what I mean? But that's where I was at that time, and, you know, that stuff happened. But, you know, I was just really, you know, I was just in that self-obsession and fear and anxiety, and I just didn't know what was wrong with me, you know, and I didn't have the ability to walk up to somebody and go, look, this is what's going on for me. You know, I'm going through this stuff and I don't know what's wrong, do you know what I mean? And looking back on it, I was getting in a position to use, you know. You know, without a programme, I will definitely go backwards and I will use, do you know what I mean? But what happened, 18 months clean. Yeah, I was told to get service commitments as well. So, like, I had 10 service commitments in my first year. You know, I was acting really well. You know what I mean? Fear, you know, frantic effort to appear recovered and try to look good and all that in meetings and look at how well I'm doing, you know, and that sort of. But I got to a point, I was just really desperate, you know, and I came back to London and I got a sponsor and I started engaging in a programme of recovery. You know, I know the difference between just being abstinent and being in recovery. You know, for me, it's two different things entirely, you know what I mean? And I started going through the steps. You know, I've been hearing a lot of stuff about this book lately. And it's like, you know, I hear people saying, oh, people hide behind this book and all that stuff. You know, this is where we recover, you know, through these steps, these traditions and all that stuff. Why would I not hide behind the book? So I'm going to hide behind the book, you know what I mean? Because that's where I learn about the disease of addiction, that's where I learn about the steps, that's where I learn about the traditions, you know what I mean? You know, my thinking, you know, I was just looking through the book. My first sort of experience of the basic text, you know, I was quite ill for quite a while in recovery, you know, physically, I had a lot of physical illness. You know, and it says in More Will Be Revealed, this is a programme of total abstinence. There are times, however, such as physical injury when medication may be valid. And I read just that one line and my head was going, however. Do you know what I mean? I was waking up in the morning, I was quite ill physically, and my head was going, however, Robert, if you're valid, we'll be alright, you'll be killed. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I was, just focused on that. I was talking to people in the street and my head was going, however, I feel valid. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't hearing anything else. I had a case of the howevers, do you know what I mean? For ages. And it was getting really painful, you know what I mean? And I phoned a doctor. I hadn't been sleeping and all that stuff. You know, it took me quite a while to get my sleep back, you know, and I hadn't been sleeping. And I phoned the doctors, and I was going to go and see the doctor and say, this is a programme of total abstinence. However, I'm not well. But what happened was, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was really in it, and, you know, I was going to the doctors the next day to get some sleeping tablets or something. It goes on to say, health problems, surgery, or extreme physical injury when medication may be valid. This does not constitute a licence to use. There is no safe use of drugs for us. Our bodies don't know the difference between the drugs prescribed by a physician for pain and the drug prescribed by ourselves to get high. As addicts, our skill at self-deception will be at its peak in such situations. Often our minds will manipulate additional pain as an excuse to use. Turning it over to a higher power and getting support from our sponsor and our members can prevent us becoming our own worst enemies. You know, and I read that at 5 o'clock one morning, and it sort of freed me up from that, however. And I phoned a couple of people in the morning before I went to the doctors, and I got a better perspective. You know, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel, you know what I mean? And I didn't go to the doctors with a case of the however's, you know what I mean? So I'm really grateful for that. But, you know, I still, as I said, you know, I started sort of going through the steps and with a sponsor. You know, I came back to London and about 18 months clean, and I got a sponsor, and, you know, we started entering into a programme of recovery. You know, we made a deal. Do you know what I mean? He told me, I'm doing this for you, so you give it away to somebody else when I've done that. Do you know what I mean? And he said to me, you're willing to go to any lengths? You know, and I've done that in recovery as well. I went to any lengths, you know, I go to regular meetings, you know, I remain sponsorable, you know, I do service, you know what I mean? I walk the steps, I pray, I meditate, you know, sometimes I don't meditate all the time. I try it on the train and stuff, but it doesn't really work for me. But I keep trying. But, you know, when I got here, I didn't have anybody or anything in my life. You know, I blamed everybody on everything that was wrong with me. You know, I had a real sort of blame thrower. I blamed everybody for what was wrong with me, really. You know, and my family had all abandoned, well, they hadn't abandoned me, I'd abandoned them, do you know what I mean? Like one of my brothers, I used to blame him for getting me kicked out of my mum's house when I was 16, 17. You know what I mean? It had nothing to do with him getting me kicked out. It was what I was doing, you know. I used to bring the police to the door, I was always thieving off them, you know, I was doing a lot of stuff to warrant that. But I thought a lot of my problems was his fault, you know. And I got a sponsor and we started going through the steps. And, you know, I ended up, I got to a place and I'd done a step four. You know what I mean? And I was really scared about doing a step four. But I'm really glad I entered into that process, and, you know, and I wrote about resentments and all that stuff. And, you know, when I first sort of started, I was thinking, resentments? I don't really have any. Do you know what I mean? But once I started writing, I got a few. Do you know what I mean? And I wrote all this stuff, all these resentments about people I hated, and they'd done this, and, you know, she'd done that, and da 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 da. And I went on and on. And while I was doing that step four, I was also, I was on interferon treatment, and I was quite ill on that. You know, I used to come to this meeting, it was round the corner when it was in the Porter Cabins a few years ago, and I was on interferon treatment, and I was doing step four, and I was at college. Do you know what I mean? And I used to phone my sponsor up and say, look, I'm really struggling with this, that, and he used to say to me, just do your step four. It'll be all right. Do your step four. But I'd do the step four. You know what I mean? But, you know, as part of that step four, I also done sexual inventory. I looked at all that stuff as well. And I'd done a fears list and a list of people I'd harmed. And, my first step four, you know, and I wasn't totally honest in my step four. You know, it talks about in step five, step five's the key to freedom. You know, and it also talks about, you know, doing a thorough inventory. You know, and I didn't do a thorough inventory in my first step four. I didn't have the ability to be totally honest. I suppose I was honest to the best of my ability at that time. But I carried some stuff, you know. There was some I'd done another step four about 6 or 7 months ago, and a step five in my sponsor, you know, and there was some stuff in that. And a lot of that stuff in my second step four was about resentments I'd picked up in recovery and stuff, I, you know, damage I'd caused to people in recovery and all that stuff. But there was some stuff on there that was from when I was a kid that I didn't share about, you know, some sexual abuse there that I just held on to, and I was full of shame and full of guilt and all that stuff. But I put it down in my step four, you know what I mean? I took the risk and I trusted another human being in God to be in that room when I shared that stuff, you know what I mean? And I shared it with my sponsor. And I've got freedom from that today, you know what I mean? I don't have to carry the shame and the guilt and all that stuff. You know, and through going through the steps, you know, doing a step eight as well, you know, I got a lot of my step four. I'm sort of missing steps a bit anyway, but I got a lot in my step four, a lot in my step eight from my step four, you know, and, you know, it talks about, in the basic text again, about, you know, the shame, the guilt and all that stuff in step eight, you know what I mean? And, you know, I was fully a lot of that stuff when I got here. You know, I used to shower 3 times a day when I first came to NA. I think I was trying to clean myself from the outside in. Do you know what I mean? I forgot it was a, you know, I used to hear it's an inside job, but I didn't really know what that meant. So I was trying to scrub myself from the outside in. But, you know, I got to a place where I was, you know, doing step eight stuff, and I really struggled with step eight. You know, there was, I still, you know, it talks about becoming entirely willing. You know, I didn't come, when I got to step eight, I wasn't entirely willing. It wasn't until I started entering into that process of writing step eight and the list that I became entirely willing. I mean, it took time for that. That was part of the process, I mean. But I struggled with my step eight. You know, my sponsor sort of said to me one night, he says, look, go to a meeting in West London, there's somebody sharing on step eight, it might help you out. You know, and I got to this meeting in West London and the guy was sharing, he's in the room tonight actually. I won't break his anonymity, but he was talking about, you know, his step eight list and all that stuff, and he spoke about financial amends. Straight away my head was like, nobody's getting any of my money. Do you know what I mean? I'm Scottish for one. Do you know what I mean? I'm skint for another. But, you know, I went back to my sponsor and he says, look, just write everything down you can think of. And I just wrote everything, everybody down I could think of that I'd caused harm. You know, my step eight list grew over time. You know, as I went out and I sort of made amends to people, other people actually came up that should have been on my first, you know, my step eight list. And I've just put them on it. And I've not had a chance to make amends to all those people. You know? But what we've done with my step eight list, we broke it down into 4 different things. You know, we've done a list of people that I would definitely go and make amends to immediately. You know, a list of people that I would make amends to if they came into my life or if I bumped into them. We made a list of indirect amends, people that were dead and stuff like that, and stuff that I couldn't do, like shops and all that stuff. And a list of stuff that I just wouldn't do because it would cause harm to others. And, you know, and some of the stuff wasn't mine either, do you know what I mean, on that list. But my sponsor's been quite... I got to a place when I was about 3 years clean. You know, I hadn't seen... I've got 3 children that I had during my reusing, and, you know, I still haven't seen my oldest daughter. She's 30-odd now, but I still haven't seen her. You know, I sort of abandoned her mum when the baby was born, and, you know, I was 16, and it was, you know, and I just left. I not long started using, sort of got in the way of my using, you know what I mean? And, but I got another girlfriend and had another couple of kids along the way. And, you know, my kids, you know, I got a daughter and a son. You know, my daughter, I hadn't seen, she's 31 now, I hadn't seen her for 8 years. What happened, I split up with her mum. She was living with her mum, her and her brother. Then they came to live with me, and I got another girlfriend, and I thought I was getting married, so I sent them back to their mum, abandoned them again, and I got married, and I buggered off, and I hadn't seen them in 8 years. But, you know, I went and made amends. You know, I hadn't seen my mum, my brothers, for years. You know, I used with one of my brother's sons, who died. I left him in a bed and breakfast in Bedford, and I buggered off to use, and I left him, and when I came back, well, I didn't get back, I ended up going somewhere else, and a couple of years later, I found out that he'd overdosed and died in the bed and breakfast. You know, my brother was on my list, you know, and I got to a place where I was about 3 years clean. I was talking to my sponsor at a meeting, Tuesday night meeting in Elephant and Castle after the meeting. And, you know, I was discussing, I was at a place to, you know, where I was ready to start doing step nine stuff. And my sponsor said to me, okay, so how are you going to start doing these amends? I said, well, I'm going to go and see my mum. You know, she was at the top of the list. I hadn't seen my mum in 18 years. And he says, okay, how are you going to do it? I says, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to save some money at my gyro every week. And I'm going to go up and get a bed and breakfast and go and see my mum, because they wouldn't let me in the house. I was phoning my brother and all that, who lived with my mum, but they still wouldn't sort of invite me into the house. You know, I used to go to the door when I was using, and they'd all put their coats on and start going, no, no, we're going out, you can't come in. Mm. Yeah, that's the kind of addict I was. They didn't want me about. So anyway, I got to a point where I was willing to go and make amends to my mum, and my sponsor says, look, don't you know anybody in the fellowship in Glasgow that could maybe help you out? And I was like, not really. A couple of days later, I was in a meeting in West London. A guy was an RCM and he was down doing service at area. And he says, look, here's my number, come up. It's cool, I've got a specialty. You know, and at that point, I was in a work placement. And I went into work on the Monday morning, and the manager's come up and says, look, here's, we've got a conference in Glasgow, we'll pay for you to go. Do you know what I mean? And I got to go to Glasgow. And I phoned my brother to let him know that I was going up. You know, the company were paying for a hotel and all that stuff. But over the course, he sort of talked to my brother. He sort of said, look, come and stay at the house. You know, he'd heard something different in me. You know, he could hear the difference. You know? So I went up and I seen my mum. You know, she was getting on a bit deaf. And I said to her, look, mum, I know I haven't been much of a son. You know, my sponsor was quite clear about not saying sorry. I'd always say I was sorry, and I'd do the same thing again and again and again and again. And I'd be sorry, sorry, sorry. So he's quite specific about not saying sorry. And I said, look, mum, I know I've not been much of a son. If there's anything that I can do to make amends for that, I'm willing to do anything. And she started crying. You know, she was a bit deaf. She just went, aye, 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 okay, son. You know, she was deaf. So I wasn't sure how much of that she actually got. So when I came back, what I started doing, I started writing her postcards and cards every couple of weeks. You know, and my mum died not long, about a year after that, you know, and I was really able to be there for my family and all that stuff. And I went to see her, and, you know, and when I was at her funeral, a couple of people, she ended up in a care home just before she died, and a couple of the people that worked in the care home were at the funeral, and they come up to me in the funeral and says, oh, your mum was really proud of you. You know, she used to rave about my boy in London's doing really well. You know, she never spoke about my other brother, who lived with her. She spoke about me, do you know what I mean? And I'm really grateful for that, because, you know, I managed to give that woman some peace of mind up last, before she died, do you know what I mean? You know, and while I was up doing the amends, you know, my brother, the guy that I blamed for a lot of my problems, you know, he lived with my mum and all that stuff. You know, he was there, and I sort of said to him, look, Johnny, I know I've not been much of a brother. If there's anything I can do to make amends for what I've done in the past, I'm willing to do anything. And he said, you know what, Robert, I'm just really glad to see you clean and that you're out of what you were in. And I'm really proud of you. And he gave me a hug. You know what I mean? And that's why he just wanted me to keep doing what I was doing, really. You know, through that, you know, he said to me while I was up there, he says, let's come with me, I want to show you something. And he took me into the kitchen and he's pointed out the window and he's gone, guess who lives there? And he's pointed to the house, sort of, adjacent. I mean, Andy, I know, I've not been here for 18 years. He went, oh, Kathy lives there. And this was somebody I was engaged to, who had caused a lot of damage, who was on the list. You know, so it sort of opened up doors for me to do other amends. You know, I haven't made amends to her because it would be really wrong of me to go round and knock on her door and say, hi, how you doing? You know, she's got another boyfriend or whatever, you know, so it would cause harm. So I haven't done that, but I'm willing if I meet her on the street, you know, I will approach her and, you know, make amends. You know, my brother, whose son died, you know, I had to go and see him and his wife and all that stuff, and I was really terrified about that amend. I went and seen my brother and I says, look, Davey, I know I can't bring David back, but I'm willing to do anything because from what I've done in the past, and, you know, I'm willing to make amends for that. And he just said, Robert, I'm just glad to see that you're alive. You know, David didn't get here, but you did, and I'm really glad of that. You know, while I was up there, he took me to a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in Glasgow, and I went into this room in the meeting, and there was like, it's a charity sort of place where there's a meeting held, and they've got tapestries up all around the wall of people who have died in addiction in Glasgow. And there was two memorials to my nephew in that room, you know, and I thought that was really quite poignant, that my brother had took me to the place that saved my life. Well, it was a memorial to his son on the wall, do you know what I mean? And I was really touched by that. You know, I didn't even get to the funeral. But what I'd done the next day is I went to my nephew's grave and I said a few prayers and I had a little chat with him, you know, and I made an amend at his grave, you know what I mean, for what I'd done. You know, and through that, you know, I made amends to my sister-in-law, you know, and through that happening, I came back after that and I was in my work placement. You know, I hadn't seen my daughter, my youngest daughter, in over 8 years. Well, what happened, she ran away to get married to a kid that was joining the police force, and I never got invited to the wedding. And I was like, so indignant, how dare they not invite me to the wedding? What happened, you know, through going to make amends to my brother, he had a phone number for her father-in-law, and he phoned the number, and she got divorced from the kid that joined the police force. And but the father-in-law gave my brother a number for a hospital that my daughter worked in. And my sister-in-law phoned the hospital, and my daughter answered the phone. You know, there was like 500-600 people probably working in this hospital, and my daughter answered the phone. Odd, God, I think it's God. You know what I mean? And I got an email from my daughter, and I was sitting in my work placement, and it said, "Hi, Dad. Really glad to hear you're clean. Really glad to hear you're alive. I've really missed you. I've got a surprise for you." Opened the attachment. I've opened this attachment up, and there was a picture of a little 4-year-old boy there, a grandson that I didn't even know I had. I mean, and as it turned out, she was going out with another policeman. Don't know what's wrong with her. She wants to join the police force, actually. But I went and met her. It turned out her boyfriend was working in over Notting Hill. He was working over there in the police station over there, and she was coming up to see him for Christmas. Must be 5-6 years ago now. And I met her at King's Cross, you know, and I went up and I met her. You know, it's the first time I'd seen her in 8 years. And I said to her, "Hi, Regan. I know I haven't been much of a dad. I'd like to try and make amends for that. If there's anything I can do, I'm willing to do anything." She gave me a hug and said, "Dad, I'm just glad to hear you're back in my life." And she's quite a big part of my life now. I was up there the other week, and, you know, my grandson and all that stuff. She's told me a bit about myself since then. You know, she told me what it was like being on the receiving end of me when I'm using, you know what I mean? And I had to just sit there and take that stuff from her. You know, through that happening, I've got in touch with my son again. You know, and my son's a using addict. You know, I've had him at this meeting a few times. And, you know, and I can't ram this stuff down his throat. I've tried. Do you know what I mean? And he just gets really resistant and all that. You know, we talk about attraction, not promotion. It's not my job to do that stuff. So what I do is I bring him to meetings and I let him talk to you as well. Because if he talks to me, we just get into conflict. You know what I mean? "Yeah, I remember you." You know what I mean? He remembers. But he's quite funny. You know, one of the last times he was up, we went out for dinner after the meeting. And I said to him, "What do you think then, Daniel?" And he went, yeah, "I can really see how it helps them people." And he said to me, "In fact, Dad, I really worry about you." I said, "Why is that, Daniel?" He says, "You do a lot of that, innit? I really worry about you when you do that stuff." He doesn't get it, do you know what I mean? And what I do is I turn up and I just be there and try and support him, you know, and take him to meetings when he wants to come to meetings. And if he don't want to come to a meeting, I don't force him, you know what I mean? And I just hope one day he ends up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous clean, you know what I mean? Yeah, and it's, you know, the programme, it's just, you know, character defects, you know. Living life clean. You know, I thought when I got here that everything in life was just going to be sweet. It was going, 5 minutes, it was going to be okay. Do you know what I mean? And it's not been the case. You know, I've faced a lot of challenges in recovery. You know, I've been homeless in recovery. I was homeless at 2 years clean in recovery. Do you know what I mean? I've had health problems in recovery. You know, and I've just been through that stuff recently. You know, I suffer from consequences in my using still that can be quite painful, quite difficult. You know, and I've had to go on pain medication a couple of times. But I've really took inventory about that stuff. You know, I've been really careful about it. But what I've found happens is my mind starts to close shut again when I'm on pain medication, and I really get into conflict with it. It really conflicts with the 12-step program. You know, for me, I just can't do it. It's just too conflicting for me, and I end up in a lot of pain, a lot of heartache, and a lot of trouble. You know, like, I'm in a relationship at the moment, and my girlfriend's really nice, and she's really helpful, and all that stuff, and she tries to be really helpful when I'm going through some stuff, and I just, like, I'm like, go away, leave me alone, you know what I mean? And I cause damage with that stuff, you know, my defects just run riot when I'm with that stuff. So I'm hoping that that changes, you know, I'm doing other stuff to try and help with the health stuff, do you know what I mean? And I'm hoping it doesn't happen again. You know, it's funny, I'll end on this, relationships, you know, I've found it difficult, you know, I've been in and out of a few relationships in recovery, you know, looking for the one. But what happens is I usually get the one before the one. But I done a in my last step four, I done a section in my step four, and you know, and I wrote about the ideal relationship that I would like for myself and for the other person. You know, and the partner I'm with at the moment, she ticked all the boxes for that stuff. Do you know what I mean? She's not an addict. She's really healthy. She's, you know, I was talking to one of my friends like the other week here. And I was saying, she's a bit strange. He says, no, Robert, she's not a bit strange. She's just normal. You're not used to normal. But, you know, she ticks all those boxes. And, you know, she was a bit frightened about going out with me in the first place. You know, but I sort of, you know, we practice spiritual principles here. One of them's perseverance. So I practice perseverance. But we ended up going out on dates and stuff, you know what I mean? And she was very sort of cautious and all that stuff. And when we started going out dating, I said to her, so why did you change your mind about going out with me? She says, it's because I see you practice spiritual principles. Yeah. I was like, it's not because I'm really handsome. But it was funny, you know, that she was very cautious and we took things very slow and all that stuff, you know. We didn't kiss for 4 months. 4 months, I was like, my God. Even when I kissed her at 4 months, she went, oh, Robert, I think this is a bit quick. I was like, what? You should be married by now. Man, so I've learned to engage in healthier relationships and recovery, do you know what I mean? And that 4 months, I must say, was quite a painful, traumatic time. You know, I had to get a lot of support through that time. You know? I found it quite difficult. But yeah, I suppose I'm probably about finished now. But yeah, I'm just really, really grateful. You know, I hear a lot of people, you know, gratitude. You know, my sponsor, I was in a meeting one time and I was sharing that I was ungrateful. And my sponsor texts me and says, what are you talking about? And I thought, oh, dare you. And I phoned him up. I said, what are you on about? He says, well, I see your gratitude. I see what you do. You put chairs at meetings, you go to meetings regularly, you help people. All that stuff. I went, yeah, but I want to feel like I did when I first got clean. Yeah. He went, listen, stupid, that wasn't gratitude, that was relief. Gratitude's an action. Keep putting the action in and you'll get the gratitude. And that's been my experience. You know, as I said, I've just come through this really dark time over the last 5 months with health issues and all that stuff. And I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And it's no longer a train coming. Do you know what I mean? Because that's how it felt. It felt like everything was just going to be a car crash or a train wreck, you know what I mean? It was really difficult. But I got a lot of support and love and care from people in this fellowship, you know. And I struggle to phone people and all that stuff. You know, I'm really quite self-sufficient. And I need to become more other centred and stuff like that and reach out and ask for help when I'm in trouble, you know what I mean? So yeah, I'm really grateful and I'll leave it there. Thank you.